Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, November 9th, 2021. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, COVID outbreak delays murder trial. Opening statements in Heidelberg case rescheduled for later this month, by Caitlin Randall. The murder trial for David Wilson, who has been charged with murder for the shooting death of Midland police officer Nathan Heidelberg, is delayed until November 30th because several people involved in the trial have tested positive for COVID-19, according to a county spokesperson. Opening statements were expected to take place Monday afternoon following 4 days of jury selection last week. More than 400 potential jurors were grouped together in the jury room of the Midland County Courthouse before a 14-person jury panel was selected Thursday. To protect the health and safety of jury members as well as their friends and family, jurors are being asked to take such action as they deem necessary, including contacting their doctor or other healthcare professional to determine their course of action, the county spokesperson said in a statement. The statement also said that jurors are still under oath and not allowed to discuss the case with anyone while the court is in recess. The trial is now set to resume on November 30th at 9 a.m. The COVID issues inside the Midland County Courthouse were enough to also have the Commissioner's Court meeting go into recess until Tuesday morning, according to a county spokesperson. This article is entitled, Craddock Declares Run for Re-election. Midland Republican Looks to Continue His Texas House Tenure. From Staff Reports. State Representative Tom Craddock announced Monday he is running for re-election in Texas House District 82. Craddock has represented the district since 1969. While the makeup of the district has varied through the years, District 82 will consist of Midland, Martin, and Dawson counties. There are important issues still facing all Texans, and I enjoy every minute I serve in the Texas House, Craddock offered in a statement. Representing the folks of West Texas is what I love. Over the years, we have seen some real success for West Texas, and there is no reason to not continue the fight. I would be proud to again represent District 82 in 2023. Craddock is the Dean of the Texas House and the longest-serving legislature in Texas history. He noted that there were 8 Republicans when he was elected to the House at the age of 25 in 1968. In 2003, when Republicans took over a majority in House, Craddock was elected House Speaker. Republicans haven't lost that majority, and they haven't lost a statewide race since 1994. Craddock worked to secure funding for the following related to House District 82 in the last regular and special sessions. An additional $40 million in funds for a new mental health hospital in the Permian Basin. $18.7 million to complete the expansion of the Physician Assistant Program in Midland. Almost $2 million for the establishment of a new Permian Basin Rural General Surgical Residency Program. $280,000 for additional support of full-time employees in the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service for chronic disease prevention. Craddock also noted his support for multiple bills to improve the lives and businesses of Texans during the 87th regular session this year. Those bills included protecting the right to worship during a public health closure, additional funds for classroom teachers, a balanced and conservative budget, the Prenatal Heartbeat Act, which prohibits an abortion after fetal heartbeat is detected, and constitutional carry. There is still unfinished business in Texas, and I look forward to being a voice for West Texas in the years to come, Craddock said. This article is entitled, Cisniega Hoyos Builds RNHA Chapter into a Political Player. Last week's Big Milestones Are a Sign of Founders' Efforts by Stuart Doreen. Last week was big for the Midland chapter of the Republican National Hispanic Assembly. When there was news being made, the RNHA was usually celebrating it. It started as Dan Corrales captured one of the two at-large seats on the 2022 Midland City Council. Corrales is the legislative affairs representative for the RNHA Midland chapter, which also endorsed Corrales in the citywide race. Then on Friday, the RNHA was front and center at the Bush Convention Center, hosting Governor Greg Abbott. It was a huge get for the Midland chapter, 6 months in the making, and it showed how quickly the Midland chapter has grown and established itself as a player in Midland politics. A little more than 2 years ago, Lucy Cisniega Hoyos started the Republican Midland chapter of the Republican National Hispanic Assembly to provide education for Hispanics. That included information about issues, opportunities to register voters, and serious messages about what happens if people don't get involved. Cisniega Hoyos has been in places like her native Mexico. In September 2019, the Midland chapter was born. Just more than 2 years later, membership has climbed to more than 140. The organization has the attention of more. Already this year, RNHA has brought gubernatorial candidate Alan West and Attorney General Eva Guzman to Midland. The local leadership has done a fantastic job building a local organization, said longtime local Republican stalwart Ernie Angelo. Jerry Morales, a former Midland mayor, said the RNHA has succeeded in building at the grassroots level. Morales said the impact is not just with the growing Hispanic population, but all of Midland. Even before Corrales' win or the Abbott event last week, RNHA's Midland chapter was having an impact with Adrian Carrasco, its fundraising representative, winning a seat on the Midland College Board. Both Carrasco and Cisniega Hoyos also serve on the city's Planning and Zoning Commission, Cisniega Hoyos on the commission chair. With 50% of the population, Hispanics need to be represented on all boards, said Morales, Midland's first Hispanic mayor. Those efforts are paying off now. The governor's appearance at the RNHA event included a bill signing for Daniel's Law. Pushed by Midlander Kathleen Kerwin-Haney, House Bill 119 prevents the discrimination of people with special needs from getting life-saving organ transplants. Daniel Kerwin is Kathleen's brother. Last week also was notable as RNHA Midland chapter members also helped with phone banks for John Lujan, who flipped a state house race in the San Antonio area. Cisniega Hoyos said that Hispanic areas of Texas are turning red. Growing Hispanic support for GOP figures, including along the border, seemed to make her case. The same can be said for Abbott, who has garnered more than 40% of the Hispanic vote in his last two runs for governor. Cisniega Hoyos said that more Hispanics are supporting conservative issues, including people immigrating into the country legally. Cisniega Hoyos said the message is resonating beyond Hispanics as locals from Vietnam and the Philippines are connecting with the RNHA Midland chapter. I want to make sure we make a difference, Cisniega Hoyos said. We are trying to deliver the message. Now is not the time to lose. We need to make time to get this accomplished. This is the Community and State page. This article is entitled County Judge Reflects on Assistance District Defeat by Stuart Doreen. Midland County voters, those residing outside the city of Midland, overwhelmingly defeated Midland County Assistance District No. 1. And County Judge Terry Johnson said last week he would not rule out bringing the tax item back before the voters. We will continue to closely monitor the needs of those in the county and community as a whole for their interest in any future action, Johnson wrote in an email to the Reporter-Telegram. Johnson was one of three members of the Midland County Commissioners Court to put a county assistance tax district on the November ballot. Luis Sanchez and Randy Prude were the others. They stated an assistance district would be key in growing revenues for the county and allow for projects to take place that would have challenged the current budget. Johnson also supported spending county money on a mailer sent to county voters to promote awareness for the assistance district ballot item and to explain what the unprecedented revenue growth in county government could mean to county residents. Johnson said the tax could raise as much as $80 million a year. County voters decided that growth wasn't needed. The Midland County Elections Office showed 658 votes for the county assistance district and 1,399 against. That translated to less than one-third of county voters approving the creation of the district and a 1.25% increase in the county sales tax. In fact, Elections Office information showed that of the nine precincts where voting took place, the highest percentage of voters voting to approve the district was Precinct 202, the Greenwood area, with 34.2% in support. Voters in the same precinct also voted down a $140 million Greenwood ISD school bond. Just more than 40.1% of voters in that precinct voted for the bond. With a school bond election and a sales tax initiative going on at the same time, voters may have felt overloaded, Johnson wrote about why he suspected the assistance district did not pass. Jonna Smoot, who has announced she will challenge Johnson for the Republican nomination for Midland County Judge, wrote in an email that she was not surprised by the results of the assistance district election. As a fiscal conservative, the proposed sales tax increase galvanized my consideration to run for Midland County Judge, Smoot wrote. At the end of the day, there was no need for the increase, other than our current big government-leaning county judge deciding he wanted to take more of your money. He never had a plan or clear message as to why he wanted to raise your taxes. That's not leadership. Smoot wrote that the county has plenty of money in reserves. The Midland County Commissioners Court is scheduled to canvass the general election and the Assistance District No. 1 on or after 9 a.m. Tuesday in the Commissioners Courtroom located at the Midland County Courthouse, 500 North Lorraine Street. This article is entitled Poll: Border COVID Drives Texans' Dismay with Biden, by Abby Livingston, The Texas Tribune. Washington. President Joe Biden's popularity among Texans has taken a precipitous slide in recent months, according to the latest Texas Tribune University of Texas poll. The survey found only 35% of Texans approved of the way he is handling his job, while 55% of Texans disapproved of his first 10 months in office. While it's been a generation since Democratic presidential candidates fared well in Texas, Biden narrowed the margin with former President Donald Trump to just under 6 points. Texans equally approved and disapproved of Biden's job performance for the first 4 months of this year. His positive and negative ratings were within the margin of error through April. But by August and into the fall, a striking slide in Texans' opinions of Biden took place. Those numbers deteriorated in August, when only 40% of Texans said in the same poll that they approved of Biden's job performance, compared with 51% who disapproved. Biden's difficult withdrawal from Afghanistan further punctured his popularity over the summer. But Biden's political problems in Texas extend beyond that issue. The fall here is more precipitous than we would have thought, said Darren Shaw, a University of Texas at Austin professor and one of the co-directors of the poll. It's not just natural erosion of the honeymoon. According to the polling, Texans are unhappy with Biden over the economy, his COVID-19 response, and his track record on transportation and infrastructure. Republicans and Democrats alike have criticized Biden for his border and immigration policies, but from opposite sides of the debate. Democrats are critical of the Biden administration for not rolling back Trump-era border and immigration policies more quickly. Republicans, meanwhile, argue that such action is the reason for an influx of migrants crossing the border. Could Biden's numbers get worse as we move into an election year? Yes, said Jim Henson, co-director of the UTTT poll and director of the Texas Politics Project at UT Austin. This is the opinion page. This column is called Opinion Extra. It is entitled Hard Work Pays Off for Election Winners by Stuart Doreen, editor. I had more than a few people ask me about the Midland City Council elections of 2021. I haven't had a good response for what happened. It's taken me a while to get my head around the wins of Robin Poole and Dan Corrales in the at-large race and Scott Dufford in the District 1 race. Around 1 week later, the only thing that comes to mind is voters picked the three most deserving candidates. First of all, let's thank all seven candidates in the at-large and District 1 races. It takes a certain amount of courage and responsibility to put oneself out there for public assessment. It didn't turn out like some wanted, but as Corrales and Poole both demonstrated, there is no reason to allow political defeat to define them. Both had lost council city bids 2 years ago. For the at-large race, the more people I talked to, the more I heard how the winners just worked harder. Former Mayor Jerry Morales said the candidates that put a lot of heart and effort came out winners. Another former mayor, Ernie Angelo, stated the two people that won ran the best campaigns. Judging by the precinct reports, the former mayors are right. I don't think there is any doubt that Poole ran an exemplary campaign, arguably one of the best citywide campaigns I remember seeing in my decades. She ran roughshod through a five-person field dominating the 10 largest turnout districts. What does that mean? She resonated with the people. There will be some who criticize the amount of money that Corrales spent. I think a person should be able to spend as much as that person wants. Our government shouldn't put restrictions on things like campaign spending or term limits for that matter. Corrales did benefit that this race elects two people, but that opportunity was there for all candidates. The key for Corrales was that he found turnout in places that other candidates couldn't compete. That is why he will be on the council in 2022. Corrales also showed some people, like prominent Midland Democrat Manny Lujan, that a Hispanic can win citywide. Corrales isn't the first. Just ask Jose Cuevas and Morales. There is value in representation that not only appeals to a fraction of the electorate. There is the benefit of having at-large candidates. Other reactions from the election. While two incumbents fell in the at-large race, the election didn't really come across as anti-incumbent. One reason is COVID was such a central factor in governance over the past 18 months, and there wasn't a laundry list of things that opponents could run on. Second, this race was about as positive as any I can remember. I would argue that the two candidates who provided the best visions for Midland moving forward won. Scott Dufford's election wasn't a surprise. He's done it before, and he will win just about any race he enters. He knows I would have liked to see him participate in the Reporter Telegram Forum, but he still did what he needed to do to earn another 3-year term. The truth is, the 2022 council will need the experience Dufford provides, having lost two experienced council members. Schumann did a better job of finding his voice as the campaign moved forward. I considered him more of a policy wonk, but he showed the ability to articulate his vision, demonstrated specifically during the Reporter Telegram Forum. All in all, it was a good introduction to local politics if he follows the example of Poole and Corrales, which is to figure out what you did right, change what hurts you from getting your message out, and remain active in the community to broaden your brand. The next round of city elections takes place in November 2022. On the ballot will be the mayor, citywide, District 3, generally Central Midland, and District 4, generally West Midland. This is the obituary column. Tuesday, November 9th. Armando Fernandez. Armando Fernandez, 73, a hard worker and father to all, passed away on Wednesday, November 3rd, with his family at his side. He was born to Fernando and Susana Fernandez on November 18, 1947, in Chihuahua, Mexico. He is preceded in death by his parents and is survived by his four sisters and one brother, Blanca Olson, Carmela Priestas, Susana Fernandez, Manzol Amaro, and Arturo Amaro. His three sons, Isaac, Israel, and Isaias Fernandez, as well as his 11 grandchildren. Memorial services will be held on Friday, November 12th at 6 p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home in Midland. Connie Jo Ackerman Blakely. Connie Jo Ackerman Blakely, age 76, of San Angelo, passed away from this life into eternal life on October 29th. Connie was born April 24th, 1945, to Wayne and Maxine Ackerman at the family home in Larned, Kansas. She was preceded in death by her parents, brother Michael Ackerman, sisters Barbara Eakin, Linda Salmons, Cynthia Garvey, and one granddaughter, Laurie Stroud. Left to cherish her memory is her husband, Lloyd Blakely of San Angelo, her children, Shelley Blakely of Midland, Stacy Stroud, Larry of Big Lake, Jack Blakely, Bertha of Big Lake, and Janelle Nedekin, Jeff of Midland. 12 grandchildren, 16 great-grandchildren, as well as her siblings and their spouses. A private family service will be held at a later date. Edith Jean Elder. Edith Jean Elder, age 95, of Midland, passed away on November 4th. Edith was born March 23, 1926, to the union of Stanley and Inez Marlowe. Edith married Billy R. Elder on January 17, 1947, and they had two children, Steve and Kathy. She is survived by her daughter, Kathy, husband, Bill White, 10 grandchildren, 15 great-grandchildren, one brother, John Marlowe. Edith was preceded in death by her parents, her husband, B.R. Elder, son, Steve Elder, her sister, and a great-grandson. She was truly loved by her family and will be greatly missed. A graveside service for Edith will be held Tuesday, November 9th at 3 p.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Fond memories and expressions of sympathy may be shared at www.ellisfunerals.com. Edward Eugene Jean Schaefer. Edward Eugene Jean Schaefer was born in Nowata, Oklahoma on October 29, 1933 to Elsie Wilhite and William Franklin Schaefer. He died November 6, 2021 after a short stay in hospital. Survivors include his wife, Margaret Peggy Schaefer of Midland, his daughter, Margaret Culbertson of Dallas, and granddaughter, Kaylee Latham Culbertson of Dallas. Jean is preceded in death by his parents of Sanger, Texas, his brother, William Donald Schaefer of Santa Fe, New Mexico, and his brother, Gerald Max Schaefer of Richardson. At Jean's request, a private family graveside service will be held at Rest Haven Cemetery. Reverend Steve Schur of the First Presbyterian Church will officiate. Casual visitation for friends with the family will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. Wednesday, November 10th at the branch at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home in Midland. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to First Presbyterian Church of Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Florence Arndt Tienert. Florence Florine Arlt Tienert was born on June 16, 1931, and went to be with her Lord and Savior on November 1, 2021. She was born and grew up at The Grove, Texas, the second of seven children. Florine is preceded in death by her husband, Walter, and two sisters, Irene and Adeline. She is survived by her son, Glenn Tienert, daughter, Debbie Vasicek, three grandchildren, one great-grandson, two brothers, Elmer Arlt and wife Carol and Lloyd Arlt and wife Brenda, two sisters, Carolyn Fusel and husband Walton, Viola Patchkey and husband Gene. Visitation will be Monday, November 8th at Cook Walden Capitol Park's Funeral Home, 5:30 to 6:30 for family and 6:30 to 7:30 for friends. Funeral service will be 1 p.m. Tuesday, November 9th at Savior Lutheran Church in Austin. Graveside committal services will follow at 2:30 p.m. at Cook Walden Capitol Park Cemetery in Pflugerville. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Always Agape. Robert Bob Perry Knox, Sr. Robert Bob Perry Knox, Sr., 89, of Midland, passed away on Thursday, November 4th. Celebration of life will be held on Tuesday, November 9th at 11 a.m. at Nally Picklin Welsh Funeral Home Chapel. Bob was born on October 11, 1932, to Maudie and Phoenix Knox in Archer City, Texas. He is survived by his wife, Glenda Knox, son, Robert P. Knox, Jr., and wife, Kay, daughter Holly Evans of Midland, five grandchildren, son Brian Shores and wife Nicole of Midland, several nieces and nephews. He is preceded in death by brothers H.P., Pat, and Scotty. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests memorial donations may be made to Lee Rebel Baseball. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklin Wells Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Death notices. Eddie Olguin. Eddie Olguin, 62, of Midland, passed away on November 4th. He is survived by his son, Raymond Cuellar, two daughters, Lisa Olguin and Gloria Cuellar, one brother, three sisters, eight grandchildren. Morris Hastings. Morris Hastings, 78, of Midland, passed away November 4th. Memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. Monday, November 15th at Nally Picklin Wells Funeral Home Chapel. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Van Hollis Piercy. Van Hollis Piercy, 31, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, November 6th in Fort Worth. The family will receive friends on Friday, November 12th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the branch at NPW, 3800 North Big Spring Street. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, November 13th at St. Anne's Catholic Church. He is survived by his parents, Van and Donna Piercy, and sister Erin Hagler.
This is Kim. I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is November 9th, 2021. Red kettle season kicks off. The familiar red kettles and the sound of the Salvation Army bell ringers are ushering in the holidays this week, and you can help. Drop some change or some bills into the kettles to help Odessa residents who need a little boost this holiday season. Even a little bit of change can change a life, Mayor Luis Melinda said Monday morning. The campaign kicked off Monday morning outside of Odessa's Hobby Lobby with a crowd of Salvation Army workers who were ready to man their own kettles now through Christmas. This week, the Hobby Lobby site, United Supermarkets, and the Music City Mall all have kettles up. After November 20th, other locations will be added. Melendez is in his first year at Odessa Salvation Army and said he knows Ector County is generous. The Salvation Army remains on the front lines to ensure that hope marches on during this holiday season. Melendez said, "Hope Marches On is the nationwide theme of the Salvation Army this year," and pointed to tough economic times to sell as the resurgence of COVID as factors in why people are struggling this year. This year, the Salvation Army has more ways to give. Visit www.salvationarmytexas.org/Odessa to donate online or scan the code at the kettle to donate via phone. Volunteers are still needed to ring the bells, and that can be set up through the website or by calling 332-0738. One local Red Kettle challenge that many look forward to each year is Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths versus Odessa Police Department Chief Michael Gerke. The two will face off again this year from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. December 4th at the entrances of the Eastside Walmart. Bragging rights are at stake for whichever lawman raises the most money. The Angel Tree program is also off to a start in Odessa. Pick up an angel from one of the trees and purchase the gifts or clothing listed to help an Odessa child in need. Also, the Empty Stocking Fund will celebrate 27 years this holiday season when it kicks off on Thanksgiving Day. The Empty Stocking Fund is an annual fundraising effort by the Odessa American and the Salvation Army. Donations to the Empty Stocking Fund stay in Odessa and help the neediest among us. Donors may drop off or mail donations at the Salvation Army, 810 East 11th Street, or the Odessa American, 700 North Grant, Bank of America Building, Suite 800. Online donations are accepted at https://give.salvationarmytexas.org/Odessa Empty Stocking. Funds raised go to buying the ingredients for a holiday meal and small gifts for children and needy senior citizens. Families apply for the help through the Salvation Army, and staff members verify the need of those applying. This year's goal is $10,000, which is the same as last year. Donate online. Ring the bell. The Salvation Army needs volunteer bell ringers this Christmas season. Groups can sign up now to ring bells at a number of locations in Ector County. One afternoon of bell ringing during the Christmas Kettle campaign can raise enough money for the Salvation Army to shelter a homeless person for 4 nights and provide 12 hot meals. To become a volunteer bell ringer, call 332-0738 or visit www.registertouring.com to sign up. Empty Stocking Fund at tinyurl.com/EYF2FYR6. Council to vote on water treatment bid. The Odessa City Council is scheduled to vote Tuesday on awarding a bid for $95 million for water treatment plant rehabilitation and miscellaneous upgrade project. The company being awarded the bid is Garney Companies Incorporated, while there will also be an agreement with Carollo Engineers Incorporated for project management during the post-construction phase services. The vote is set during the City Council's regularly scheduled meeting at 6 p.m. Tuesday on the fifth floor of City Hall in the City Council Chambers located at 411 West 8th Street. The City Council agenda details that Odessa Public Works Director Thomas Kerr will speak to the City Council about the water treatment plant rehabilitation and miscellaneous upgrade projects. The project is budgeted for $95 million to be paid with certificates of obligation, which the City Council approved 6-1 on August 3rd. Kerr will speak to the City Council about approving Engage Parks Incorporation to rebuild Bob Darrington Water Reclamation Facility mechanical bar screen. The bar screen is budgeted for $141,817. Kerr reportedly told City Council during last week's work session that the bar has a life expectancy of 20 years. During the public hearing section, City of Odessa Planning Director Randy Brindley will talk to City Council about considering approval of rezoning a total of 31.63 acres near the southeast intersection of P. Bar Ranch Road and North Vaudre Road. The rezone request will be for retail and retail one. Other items. Consider approval of City Council minutes, October 26, 2021. Consider approval of City Council work session minutes, November 2, 2021. Consider approval of the request of Arturo Villalobos, owner, to rezone from Single Family Residence 3, SF-3, to Light Commercial, LC, on the northern portion of Lot 1, Block 1, Arturo Addition, City of Midland, Ector County, Texas, 927 South Muskingum Avenue, Ordinance Second and Final Approval. Consider approval of the request by Robert Llanes, leasee, Raja LLC, owner of a specific use permit to allow a tavern use in a Retail 1, R1 zoning district on Lot 1, Block 6, Brownstone Addition, 4101 Medical Park Drive, Suite 100 and 105. Ordinance, second and final approval, Randy. Consider purchase of traffic signal poles. Man charged with using Odessa nonprofit funds. An Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit detailed a 30-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly made 95 unauthorized transactions during a six-month period for more than $52,000 of funds as he was acting as the CEO of the Odessa Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. Paul Garza, Jr., 30, was charged with theft of property of more than $30,000 and but less than $150,000, a second-degree felony. According to the probable cause affidavit, Odessa Hispanic Chamber of Commerce Chairman Benjamin Quiros reported that its CEO Garza used the organization's funds for his own expenses and the expenses of others not involved in the organization without effective authorization or consent and with the intent to defraud and deprive the organization of its property. The Odessa Hispanic Chamber of Commerce reportedly provided documentation of unauthorized transactions made to the organization's Frost Bank Visa debit card issued to Garza between February 2021 and July 2021. An audio recording of the organization's meeting corroborates witness reports that Garza admitted to using the Odessa Hispanic Chamber of Commerce funds for purposes not related to the organization, the affidavit stated. Also, during said audio recording, Garza reportedly claimed that he accidentally diverted $20,000 in funds away from the organization, but an account audit showed 95 unauthorized transactions were made over a period of 6 months for an estimated total of $52,116.33. These transactions included unauthorized electronic Zelle payments that were made from the Odessa Hispanic Chamber of Commerce account made payable to Garza and other payees, and that two of these payees reported that Garza explained their payments as donations or grants authorized by the Odessa Hispanic Chamber of Commerce Board. Garza was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on November 5th, jail records show. He had one bond totaling $25,000 and he posted bail on November 6th.
Hello, this is Michael, and I am continuing to read the Odessa American for Tuesday, November 9th, 2021. Sexual assault team on county agenda. Ector County District Attorney Dusty Gallivan will ask county commissioners at a 10 a.m. today regular meeting to bolster the investigation and prosecution of adult sexual assault cases by creating a six-member response team. Gallivan, who took office last January, will propose creating a team consisting of a chief administrator, a prosecutor, representatives of the Odessa Police Department and Sheriff's Office, a sexual assault nurse examiner or forensic examiner, a behavioral health sciences provider, and a presiding officer as recommended by the team. In other business, the court will consider accepting the bylaws of the Library Advisory Board and expanding the panel by naming Felice Abalos, Kelly Wilkes, and Tahisha Muhammad additional members of it. The commissioners will also appoint a representative to the appraisal board, discuss donating $49,038 to the Odessa Council for the Arts and Humanities. Hear a proposal from Sheriff's Information Technology Specialist Stephen White to install ice shields on the radio towers at No Trees and Penwell. Consider White's request to repair antenna lines at the county jail and the Penwell Tower. Review a plan submitted by the Odessa Schleymeyer Field Airport Advisory Board to buy a foreign objects debris sweeper. Consider authorizing a geotechnical investigation by the Landgraf Crutcher Associates Engineering Company for the $25 million juvenile detention center that's slated for construction adjacent to the jail, just south of town off U.S. 385. Discuss leasing a mobile clinic for the health department. UTPB Professor Among Arts Awards Winners. The Oklahoma Arts Council has announced the names of 14 individuals and three organizations that will be honored for their contributions to the arts during the 44th Oklahoma Governor Arts Awards on Tuesday. One of the honorees is Deanne Jordan, a senior lecturer in the College of Arts and Sciences at University of Texas Permian Basin, who lives in Broken Bow, Oklahoma. The awards will be presented by Governor J. Kevin Stitt during a special ceremony beginning at 4 p.m. in the fourth floor rotunda at the Oklahoma State Capitol. Jordan researched and compiled materials to produce an art exhibition and publication on the life and legacy of internationally renowned artist Harold Stevenson. A native of southeast Oklahoma, Stevenson's mentorship of Andy Warhol contributed to the famed artist's success, a news release said. It was a complete surprise, and I am pleased for the awareness it brings to Harold Stevenson, an underappreciated American artist, Jordan said in an email. Jordan said she never dreamed the project would receive much recognition outside of Stevenson's hometown. Now I have bigger dreams. I'm gathering additional archives to complete the comprehensive Stevenson biography. The true stories are fully documented, are worthy of a movie or made-for-TV series. An archive from a 93-year-old friend of Stevenson's includes photographs from the early 1960s at the Italian Palazzo of their friend Peggy Guggenheim. My hope is that our research will create national and international recognition for Stevenson, Andy Warhol's lost pop star, she wrote. Recipients are selected from submitted nominations by the Governor's Arts Award Selection Committee, composed of members of the Governor-appointed Oklahoma Arts Council Board. The efforts of our Governor's Arts Awards honorees are why the arts continue to inspire hope and resilience for Oklahomans during the COVID-19 pandemic, Oklahoma Arts Council Executive Director Amber Sharples said in their release. Their commitments reflect the investment necessary to ensure the arts endure to meet important needs in our state. We look forward to celebrating their steadfast devotion to their communities through their efforts in the arts. Honorees cover everyone from artists to architects to arts and education and community service. Quick hits. Christmas for Kids. Catholic Charities of Odessa, 2500 Andrews Highway, are taking appointments for Christmas for Kids, a program for families who need assistance providing Christmas gifts to their children ages 17 or younger. First come, first served. Requirements needed for appointment: photo ID, birth certificates or legal document of guardianship for all children, proof of income, and utility bill with address. To make an appointment, call 432-332-1387. OC Honors Luncheon. Odessa College will present the 14th OC Honors Luncheon at 11:30 a.m. today at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, 305 East 5th Street. Keynote speaker will be Jeffrey Canada. This year's honorees will be Lisa Wyman, Outstanding Individual; Julie Marshall, Outstanding Educator; La Margarita, Outstanding Business; Medical Center Health System, Outstanding Nonprofit; Rohit Saravan, MD, Community Impact; and Wood Family Virginia Chisholm, Hall of Fame inductees. Sponsorship and tables are available. Online donations are also welcomed. Sponsorships from the luncheon will directly impact OC students through scholarships. These scholarships include the Student Success Scholarship, as well as the scholarships for more specialized areas, such as education, nursing, engineering, music, and more. To sponsor, purchase, or a table, to donate, or for more information, call 432-335-6648. Veterans Week of Events. The University of Texas of the Permian Basin, 4901 East University Boulevard, will celebrate and honor veterans Monday through Thursday. Today, 1 p.m. to 2 p.m., short readings and discussion at the Student Activity Center, upstairs in the Fishbowl. Wednesday, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., Veterans Health Fair and Pro Bono Legal Clinic at the D. Kirk Edwards Family Human Performance Building. Thursday, 9:30 a.m., Veterans Day Ceremony at the UTPB Gym. Pre-order Christmas decor. Parks Legato Christmas Tree Market is almost here. Pre-order your trees and decor to secure your tree, wreath, garland, and poinsettia when they arrive. Pickup and deliveries will begin at 5 p.m. November 19th. Fraser Fir Christmas trees are $100 for 8 to 9 feet and $140 for 11 to 12 feet. Garland is $50 for 30-inch. Poinsettias are $15. Wreaths are $36 for 30-inch, $44 for 34-inch, $52 for 40-inch, and $68 for 48-inch. Delivery charge is $25 within 25 miles. For more information or to pre-order, visit tinyurl.com/V5U924FU. State of Education Signature Luncheon. The Midland Chamber of Commerce and Pioneer Natural Resources Company has scheduled the 2021 State of Education Signature Luncheon with keynote speaker Angelica Ramsey, Superintendent, Midland ISD, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Wednesday at the Bush Convention Center, 105 North Main Street, Midland. The luncheon is hosted to engage and inform the public about the challenges and opportunities facing the public and private schools, as well as colleges and universities. Registration is required. Sponsorships are available. For tickets or sponsorships, visit bit.ly/3ijfkah. Live tour. Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North FM, 1788 Midland, has scheduled Blue October at 7:30 p.m. Wednesday. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. For tickets or information, visit wagnernoel.com. Veterans Campaigns. Bubba's 33 will be hosting a fundraising campaign for veterans in partnership with the Medical Center Health System Foundation. On Wednesday, 10% of all total food and non-alcoholic purchases at their Odessa location will be donated to assist veterans at Medical Center Health System. Customers also have the option to donate additional funds when paying their bill. The money raised will fund vital treatments, equipment, charitable care, and other necessities for veterans who receive medical care while at MCHS. Corporal Ray's Coffee will be hosting a fundraising campaign for veterans in partnership with Medical Center Health System Foundation on Veterans Day Thursday. 10% of all coffee purchases at their Faudry location will be donated to assist veterans at Medical Center Health System. Customers also have the option to donate additional funds at the register, a news release said. This is the first year the MCHS Foundation will hold a campaign benefiting veterans at MCHS. For more, visit mchodessa.com. West Texas Safari Club donates $10,000 for Trans-Pecos. The West Texas chapter of Safari Club International has made a $10,000 donation to support two wildlife research projects underway at the Borderlands Research Institute at Sul Ross State University. One project is examining the diets of desert bighorn sheep, mule deer, and iodide in shared habitats. The second study seeks to validate age estimates of wild ungulates, including pronghorn, desert bighorn, sheep, and mule deer. We've supported BRI projects in West Texas for several years now, and our members appreciate making investments in our own backyard, said Brandon Bredemeyer, board president of the West Texas chapter of Safari Club International. We hunt in West Texas, and we appreciate the work BRI does to conserve the species that are so important to us and to all who appreciate wildlife in Texas. The diet study explores the impact iodide have on native populations of bighorn sheep and mule deer in the Van Horn Mountains in West Texas. Iodide are an invasive species and are considered a threat to the success of ongoing desert bighorn sheep restoration in the Trans-Pecos and southern New Mexico areas. Iodide threatens similar wildlife restoration efforts in other western states as their range expands. Management of iodide is a controversial topic, so objective information and quality research is critical to determining feasible and acceptable management strategies that will ensure the long-term survival of native species, a news release said. The aging study explores new methods of determining the age of wild ungulates. Current aging methods are unreliable at best, despite their widespread acceptance and use. Recent advances have demonstrated the utility of telomere-based aging methods across a variety of species. A telomere is the tip of a chromosome found in all DNA, the length of which appears to correlate to the age of the individual animal. The study currently underway at BRI will validate telomere-based age estimates against an existing set of tissue samples from known and near-known aged ungulates captured for various research projects across the Trans-Pecos. The study will extend these data to provide a framework for estimating ungulate demography from genetic samples. Our students are doing cutting-edge wildlife research, and we are adding to the knowledge base from which good land management decisions are made, said Lewis Haverson, who is the Dan Allen Hughes Jr. BRI Endowed Director and Professor of Wildlife Management at Sul Ross State University. We appreciate the support of the West Texas Chapter of Safari Club International in supporting our work. The West Texas Chapter of Safari Club International raises money each year through charitable events and auctions. The next fundraising event is the West Texas Hunting Extravaganza, which will be held on January 15, 2022 in Midland. Woman charged with assaulting five people. A 29-year-old woman was arrested after she reportedly struck her cousin in the face, bit an Odessa Police Department officer twice on the shoulder, kicked another OPD officer, and an Odessa fire rescue medic in the face, kicked an LVN in the face, and spit multiple times on a third OPD officer. Crystal Ordaz was charged with two counts of assault on a public servant, a third-degree felony, two counts of assault on an EMS personnel providing service, a third-degree felony, harassment of a public servant, a third-degree felony, and assault causing bodily injury, family violence, a Class A misdemeanor. The reported incident started around 10:30 p.m. November 6th in the 3000 block of North Century Avenue, an OPD probable cause affidavit stated. A woman, later identified as Ordaz, was screaming in the middle of the roadway. Corporal Tyler Silverthorne reportedly arrived at the scene with the cousin of Ordaz, identified as Cassandra Benavidez. Corporal Silverthorne advised that upon making contact with Ordaz, that she was belligerent and had blood on her hands and skin. Benavidez approached Ordaz in an attempt to make contact with her, and that's when Ordaz struck Benavidez in their face, causing injury to her face. Corporal Silverthorne approached Ordaz to place her in handcuffs to arrest her for assault, and that's when Ordaz bit Corporal Silverthorne on the right shoulder twice, inflicting injury to his shoulder, breaking skin. Ordaz was reportedly placed in handcuffs and arrested for assault causing bodily injury, family violence, and assault on a public servant. Due to Ordaz's injuries, OFR was notified and responded to the scene. Ordaz was laid down on a gurney, and while she was being transported to the ambulance, she forcefully kicked another officer on the scene, Corporal Gabriela Agualo, and OFR medic Dakota Hallmark, both on the right side of their heads, causing pain, the affidavit stated. Ordaz was additionally charged with another count of assault on a public servant and assault on an EMS personnel providing service. Ordaz was placed in the ambulance for transport. While on scene at Medical Center Hospital, Ordaz was reportedly becoming belligerent once again. While MCH staff was attempting to provide service, Ordaz reached her right leg up and kicked an LVN, identified as Cynthia House, on the left side of her face, which caused pain and damage to House's glasses. Ordaz was additionally charged with another count of assault on an EMS personnel providing service. After assaulting House, Corporal Andrew Garris was restraining Ordaz's legs to prevent her from kicking additional staff, the affidavit stated. Ordaz sat up and got close to Corporal Garris's face and began spitting saliva at him multiple times. Ordaz was treated and released from MCH, and she was transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center, the affidavit stated. Ordaz has six bonds totaling $77,500 and was still in custody as of Monday morning, jail records show. Board to consider hiring ED of Operations. The Ector County ISD Board of Trustees will meet in a work session at 6 p.m. today, Tuesday, in the first floor boardroom of the administration building, 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. Hiring an executive director of operations also is on the agenda. Trustees will hear a quarterly update on the district strategic plan, technology improvements, personalized professional development, indicator of success, such as attendance, will be discussed. The panel also will consider hiring an executive director of district operations and discuss a number of local policy items. UTPB to mark Native American Heritage Month with film. To mark Native American Heritage Month, University of Texas Permian Basin today, Tuesday, will screen the film Te Ara and host a discussion afterward. The event is from 4 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. in the library lecture hall on campus. History professor Jeff Washburn said Te Ara is about a Chickasaw woman based on Mary Thompson Fisher, also known as Te Ara. This occurs around the late 19th to early 20th century. The film itself is produced by Chickasaw Nation Productions and includes indigenous actors, indigenous people within the movie itself, Washburn said. One of the things they wanted to provide was a movie with indigenous voices and actors and a discussion afterward with students, faculty, and staff. Anyone who wants to join concerning the film and both the histories of indigenous peoples and the activities of indigenous peoples in the present, he added. The hope is to continue Native American Heritage Month activities into the future. We really hope to continue this next year. I will be teaching a couple of Native history courses next year. It's something I'm really looking forward to, involving more people here at the University of Texas Permian Basin for it, Washburn said. He added that everyone has been absolutely fantastic and incredibly supportive for creating, sponsoring, and promoting this event. I'm hoping that translates to new events in the future as well, Washburn said. The film and discussion will be the primary activity this month. He noted that the library has been phenomenal in helping him through the entire process. They have also created a display in the library of books about indigenous history, indigenous art, and books written by indigenous authors and more. He is encouraging students to swing by the library and look at the display and the Native American offerings the library has. Washburn said Native American Month has been marked for a while. This is my second year at UTPB. My ongoing book project is focused on indigenous peoples of the late 18th and early 19th century, particularly in the American Southeast. During my years at the University of Mississippi, I was involved with their Native American Heritage Month activities. It was something I really was excited to do, promote. It was something our students there really enjoyed and interacted with and had a great time with, especially. We're in November. This is kind of toward the tail end of the semester. It's always a great time to connect with students and to find new ways to reach out to them, Washburn said. Death notices for Tuesday, November 9th. Ollie Mae Perkins, Odessa. Ollie Mae Perkins, 89, of Odessa, died Friday, November 5th, 2021, in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m., November 10th, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Pastor Johnny Touchson is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Alan Leroy Johnson, Odessa. Alan Leroy Johnson, 55, died Tuesday, November 2nd, 2021, in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.